Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Wednesday, August 28th. I'm Lauren Schmidt reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, Humboldt's, quote, amazing broadband projects celebrated. Garberville's new mural honoring Wailaki culture. And early harvest marks a promising season for Mendocino wines. Stay tuned, news on those stories and more coming right up. Broadband internet service in underserved areas of Humboldt County is slated for millions of dollars of improvements. KMUD's Daniel Mintz reports.
Those promoting better broadband internet service in the Humboldt County region are in a celebratory mood as $71 million of broadband improvement projects are up for approval. Connie Stewart of Cal Poly Humboldt, who has long worked for better broadband internet service, enthusiastically reported on an expanded slate of projects at the August 26 meeting of the Redwood Region Economic Development Commission, known as REDEC. The projects, including those in southern Humboldt, will provide fiber-to-home broadband connections with faster speeds and low prices in communities deemed underserved. Stewart described the positive developments.
When I originally brought this item up forward, I was like terrified that all I was going to do is talk about Humboldt Bay Area. And then an email came from the California Public Utilities Commission. And that email says that we're up for consideration next for proposals in, are you ready? Smith River, Orleans, Fairhaven, Manila, Indianola, Myers Flat, Miranda, Phillipsville, Wyatt, Neyland, Oreck, and Big Lagoon, all getting asymmetrical fiber to the home in all the unserved communities in that area. And many of them are also low income and they're getting guaranteed low prices for between 5 and 10 years. So
that's amazing.
It's absolutely amazing. And so many of you, congratulations. You know, I will let you know that Greg, I'm sorry if you, need to move back to Southern Humboldt, but I am going to get petroleum in that area and Ferndale done eventually here. But I just think that's fantastic news.
Stewart said the next target for fiber-to-home projects is the Eureka area, and Arcata is in the works. The projects are up for federal funding. Asked about it, Stewart said the projects include tribal areas with provider companies receiving the money and adding to it.
The Karuk tribe is one application. The Yurok tribal telephone is another. AT&T has all of the Southern Humboldt and Neyland, and then Fairhaven, Manila, and Indianola are Vero. I mean, that's the other good thing is we have a lot of ISPs that participated. So I'm really grateful rather than just having one, we'll have a much more robust system. So in total, it was 8 applications for $71 million. So we're not going to get that money. And actually, most of the projects have match money and the companies put up the match money as well.
The California Public Utilities Commission will vote on recommending the funding September 26th. Also at the meeting, Scott Thompson of Nordic Aqua Farms gave an update on the company's Humboldt Bay Indoor Fish Farm project. Thompson said the big story is the project's nearly completed permitting.
We're down to just the last few actions. So we still have an incidental take permit from CDFW we're looking for. A permit from the Army Corps of Engineers and the consultation with National Marine Fisheries. The state lands lease meeting is actually this week. So that's exciting. Hopefully that goes well. It's just on the consent calendar, adding us to the use of that outfall pipe. But by the end of the year, we're optimistic we should have these permits. Right now, it's really down to, you know, the mitigation ratios and things like that. We don't go back in front of any more boards. So it's more, we're past the discretionary part of it on some level, but that by any means doesn't mean we're done. So, you know, we still need a demolition permit, building permit, lots of other types of permits, but we're getting really close and it's exciting. I'm looking forward to, you know, knocking some things down, cleaning up that site.
Once intended for Atlantic salmon production, the fish farm is now geared to production of yellowtail, which is used in sushi. The project is significantly downscaled. When Atlantic salmon was the target species, a 766,000 square foot fish farm was planned. Thompson said the facility is now designed at 188,000 square feet. In Eureka for KMUD News, this is Daniel Mintz.
Ha Cho Eel River Watershed, home of the Wailaki Kinestep people, are the words that now greet locals and visitors alike on Garberville's latest mural. Earlier today, KMUD News visited with the artist brightening the town, who shared more on her latest work.
My name is Lacey Dane, and I live in Soham. I've lived here for about 20 years now, and I paint murals here and there and everywhere.
While Dane has created art across the North Coast, she says it all started in Garberville.
My first mural was at the Stone Junction in the ladies' bathroom, and thankfully Joel gave me a shot because you need a job to get a job. And then I did a mural out at Jippo, and I've done murals all over the place. There's a bunch in Shelter Cove, Redway School. I'll be up in Casterlin at the Casterlin School after this project that I'm doing here in Garberville right now.
She explained that natural beauty was an influence on her decision to study art, and her style features many natural scenes, like redwoods, birds, and salmon, capturing the essence of Southern Humboldt.
You know, I'm very, very fortunate. I think about this all the time because there's a lot of great muralists and artists, and I get a lot of support from the community, from friends, word of mouth, and I just feel really lucky.
Her latest mural can be found on 2nd Street in Garberville, near the town square, located behind the Vocality Community Credit Union.
Sarah Brooks, she applied for a grant for this project, and it was really her vision to try to get something anywhere, a mural anywhere in Garberville, first of all. It's really hard to find a wall and to go through that, but her vision was to honor the Wailaki Kinestep people and do a map of the Eel River watershed and kind of use some imagery to honor the people who were here before us.
And the mural is nearly complete.
Right. Well, this is a map. Half of it's the ocean. Half is a map of the Eel River watershed, including some other rivers. It's just kind of an exaggerated version of this area, and we're highlighting the rivers that we love so much. And then there's some imagery here. We have Arrowhead and the redwoods and ferns, and it reads just like an exaggerated map, and it's very colorful, and it adds a little splash to the square here. Actually, I'm surprised. I wasn't sure it was going to be that noticeable, but when you walk out of Chautauqua or anywhere here, it's just like really prevalent, and it just feels nice because it's so gray in here, and kind of, you know? And so there's a splash of blue, and I think blue makes people very happy. Thanks to everybody who supports the arts, and I just think we really need it in our world right now. There's a lot of people struggling, and I'll say when I do murals, it's often in a part of town where I'm kind of the eyes and ears for about a week. I'm there from sun up to sundown, and I see a lot of the things that go on, and there's a lot of struggle with some people, you know? And it's just interesting to see the health of a community. And there's also so many wonderful, nice people that stop by and some really good things going on, but also just to be aware of, you know, the people that are struggling and they walking around having some issues, and a lot of people don't stop and help, and some people do, and that kind of touches my heart. So I don't know, I just think it's cool to be parked in a spot and seeing the things that go on, and just having a mural. I've had people come and sit right here. They were having a really hard time and they just sat there for hours and stared at the mural, and it just made me feel good because I was like, oh, like this is exactly what I'm trying to do, what we do, what art does. It's like chills people out for a second, gives them a little bit of reprieve from what else is going on in their lives.
The mural aims to uplift the community and serve as a land acknowledgement to our region's ancestral caretakers, the Wailaki or Kinistet people. A native-run local nonprofit that collaborated on the mural also shares these goals.
And Joan De Jing, Ashulye Perry, Shikinistet, Hokinistine, Choget Holabe, Tai Chi Kup.
That was Perry Lincoln, the director of Native Health in Native Hands, a Wailaki nonprofit.
What I said was, beautiful day to everyone. I'm Kinistet, who is also known as Wailaki in that area.
The Wailaki people speak a variation of the Diné language, similar to the Talawa Nation in Del Norte County and the Navajo Nation in the Southwest. Lincoln's ancestral home was in the Dobbins Creek watershed near Alder Point, and his grandmother lived there during first contact. She was sold into slavery and forcibly relocated to the Round Valley Reservation. While some Wailaki people never left and continue to live here today, many others are now living among the Round Valley, Bear River, and Hoopa reservations. Like Lincoln, who hasn't been able to return to his ancestral home, now private ranch land. It's a painful history, but it's also the driving force behind creating this nonprofit.
Native Health and Native Hands, in our language, it's Choget Holabe, which means the healing comes from us, comes from within. It's in our hands to heal ourselves. Nobody can heal us for us.
His group works with Wailaki people and non-Native settlers, who currently call Southern Humboldt home.
There's a lot of healing that needs to be done. Very honored, and you know, to be able to come into the area, be received by some beautiful people. It's my dream, bringing people together, non-Native organizations and Native people, to work together to make a better world for all of us.
Over the last few years, Lincoln, with support from the Native Health and Native Hands team and supporters, has been connecting the Native and non-Native community with cultural knowledge and traditions. In June of this year, they launched a dugout redwood canoe on the Ha Cho or Eel River after a 170-year absence, a historic milestone for the community. The group is continuing their work to bring their culture back to their ancestral lands of Southern Humboldt and Northern Mendocino, working toward shared stewardship goals like cultural fire crews, all brought to fruition through local partnerships to reconnect with the land and water.
Coming together as a people, I kind of said earlier, as non-Native people, organizations, Native people, whether that be tribal, from like Round Valley, there's tribal members, and then there's also Wailaki people that are not tribal, federally recognized tribes, you know, that have lived in the area for years and years, and, you know, their families have never left. For us to come together and gain land access and heal ourselves from whatever, you know, we want to call it, whether that's historical trauma, whether it's drug and alcohol abuse, whether it's just whatever it is, you know, we've been through a lot, and so now we're healing up. We're making that attempt to heal ourselves.
The new mural in Garberville also acts as a land acknowledgement, letting locals and visitors know that this is Wailaki or Kinistet land. However, land acknowledgements can also be treated as passive nods to indigenous histories. But scholars like Dr. Kutcha Risling Baldy of the Hoopa, Yurok, and Karuk Nations, chair of the Native American Studies at Cal Poly Humboldt, argues that land acknowledgments should remain active parts of how people engage in decolonization and community building, and that they are important to tie Humboldt County history and ongoing indigenous movements. I asked Lincoln for his thoughts.
Our creator, brought us to the land and shared with us how to survive and shared with us how to take care of the land and how to care for each other and how to really be human beings. That's why our name is Kinestet. It means human being. And our creator provided us with the information how to live on the land in harmony. You know, so when the names were given to the land, the river, the water, all these different places, those are very important to us to reconnect to, because they were given so many thousands of years ago. And you know, it's just so important to understand that for people, because, you know, we don't want to think of a place that was just empty and all of a sudden people came and made it what it is today, because that's not the history. That's not a true history. And we all feel kind of empty because we hear that and we're like, oh, there's more to the story than that. And we all need to share the right story. So, you know, people coming together, people sharing the names of the water and the hills and the different places, and makes it more holistic, and it makes it more where people have a better understanding of who we really are as human beings, who we can really be. Helps us to be more whole and to be more human and to be more neighborly and to love and care for each other in a better way. That's the way we've lived for thousands of years. So we've never forgot that, and we never will forget that. We want to share that with everyone now.
While the Garberville mural is just another dream come true for Lincoln, he says Native Health and Native Hands will continue to work with community partners to heal the land and heal the people.
When does the healing start? You don't really know until you've done it a few times. When our youth feel who they really are and feel good about themselves, we want to have a continuous land celebrations and land access.
Lincoln thanked community members like Sarah Brooks, who applied for the grant to make this mural possible, and all of the community members who have supported this movement.
I'm working on a thank you celebration in November, like we did last November, for everyone, and everyone's invited to that, because so many people have supported what we're doing. So many people in the area believe in what we're doing, and that's what community, and that's what neighborly, you know, communication really is. And the more we can do that, if we make it an annual thing, I think that's very important. And more things come up as time goes on, you know. So just to kind of like solidify all of those things that we've kind of started, and more, you know, we want to do language. We want to do more stuff in the area. We just need places to do these things. Places like Mateo has supported us, and hopefully we can get out to the beginnings and do a celebration. But to bring people in that have done and are doing things in different areas is really important, so that everybody gets a chance to hear about what Native people are doing across the nation. And it's a big movement for Native people, and it takes everyone to support that. It isn't just a one culture or one people doing it. Everybody is supporting it and making it what it is today. So I really thank everyone out there in the radio land. I thank you so much for supporting us and for supporting that human experience.
You can learn more about Native Health and Native Hands by following them on social media or by visiting their website, where you can become a member at nativehealthinnativehands.org. Turning to Mendocino, an early harvest marks a promising season for the county's wines. KZYX's Elise Cox reports.
It's the time of year when the belladonna lilies bloom. Visitors see the gorgeous pink flowers on their slender stems and think, walks on the beach, foggy mornings with a cup of tea and a book, a relaxing evening meal with a glass of wine. But for locals who work in the wine industry, the flowers mean something entirely different.
The pink ladies, if you see those flowers, that's kind of the sign that, like, it's time, it's go time. So if you're driving through the valley and you see pink ladies, it's like harvest is here.
That's Courtney DeGraff, executive director of the Anderson Valley Wine Growers Association. I called to ask her about the grape harvest, which has just gotten underway.
We're about 20 days ahead of last year, so it's going to be an earlier harvest. And it's good. You know, there were some heat spikes this year, and so that kind of, you know, advances things.
It could have gone another way, but the heat came early after the rains, adding energy at just the right time. And so the growers are optimistic, not just in Anderson Valley, but Napa and Sonoma as well.
It's going to be a good harvest.
The optimism was palpable at the 45th annual Mendocino County Fair Wine Competition on Saturday in Hopland, where judges were asked to rate wine in 14 categories as worthy of gold or silver medals.
This is the first year we've done it as a people's choice type of event, as opposed to having, you know, 8 to 10 judges come and taste 200 plus wines. You know, the consumers are the people that are buying the wine, so we wanted to change it up a little bit this year and have, you know, people that are buying the wine in stores come and taste and be the judges.
That's Bonnie Butcher, the executive director of Mendocino Wine Growers, who put on the Hopland event. The judges were asked to rate the wines based on color and clarity, the intensity of the aroma, and flavor notes such as fruit, pear or cherry, floral, rose or violet, earthiness, mushrooms or forest floor, oak, vanilla, or spices. Also, sweetness, acidity, tannins, and body. Sophia Riviere, a winemaker at the Torrey Vineyard in Hopland, said Mendocino wines stand out for their soulfulness.
I've been tasting already Chardonnay, some Rosé, Sauvignon Blanc, and Petit Tourat, and it's fun. I think it's great to have a blind tasting. It's the first time I think that they're doing this, and I think it's great because it just invites you to taste wine in a different way that you don't know which is the label, the brand. So I think it's an invitation to be open to your senses.
Results of the competition were sent out on Wednesday, and we were particularly interested in who had won Best in Show and whether the People's Choice had yielded any surprises.
So we had 31 different wineries submit and 100 entries. Of all of those, we had 5 Best in Show winners, in white, red, sparkling, rosé, and dessert. And then we had 11 double gold medals, 27 gold medals, 30 silver, 27 with no awards, and we had 77 judges voted. So I can tell you specifically on who won what if you're interested.
Yes. I'd love to know.
So Best in Show Sparkling, I don't think, you know, a surprise to anyone in Mendocino County, went to Roederer Estate. Their Brut Multi-Vintage Sparkling won Best in Show. Let's see, for Best in Show Rosé, it went to, oh, I hope I don't say their name incorrectly, it's Pleiades, P-L-E-I-A-D-E-S Wine Company. It was a Sangiovese Rosé, and believe it or not, they actually won the same award last year for their 22 vintage. So clearly they're doing something right. For the Best in Show Red, that went to Barra of Mendocino's Reserve Petite Syrah. Let's see, for Best of Show White, that went to Hush Vineyards 2023 Sauv Blanc. And then for dessert wine, Best in Show Dessert went to Hush Vineyards Late Harvest Gerstenmeier.
How did you decide in Best in Show?
So it went, the way we tallied everything up is, you know, whoever of these 77 people that voted, and not, of course, of these judges, not everybody. It would be insane for everyone to taste all 100 wines. That definitely wasn't, nobody did that. They would be rolling in the parking lot. So we basically just tallied up, you know, whoever got the most gold votes in the categories is how we figured the Best of Show. Of course, we combined for the red, whoever got the most votes and everything got the Best of Show in the red category. That's basically how we did it. And then there were double gold medals and gold medals that all came down to each individual category.
Some well-known names like Navarro and Penny Royal Farms Winery are missing from the winners list. Bonnie said that they were uncomfortable with the new format and did not submit.
which is unfortunate because they do really well. They would have done really well. I wish they would have submitted wines.
But there's always next year, and in their absence, a few new names have had a chance to shine. KZYX listeners can find the list of Best in Show winners and double gold winners on our website. Just click to read the print version of this story. You'll also be able to taste the award-winning wines at the upcoming Mendocino County Fair, September 13th to 15th in Boonville. For the KZYX News, I'm Elise Cox. For all our local stories with photos and more, visit kzyx.org.
In state news, humane and sustainable fish labels may be misleading. Suzanne Potter reports.
Labels on fresh fish marked humane or sustainable may not be telling the whole story, according to animal welfare advocates. Fish shoppers are increasingly looking for an environmental seal of approval. But Dr. Helen Browning, who lectures on animal welfare at the University of Southampton in the UK, says fish labeled sustainable means the species was not overfished, but says nothing about how the fish was raised or if it suffered a painful death.
And so I think that could be quite confusing for consumers. You know, they might think that humane products are sustainable products are humane, when actually neither of those things have to be the case.
The Monterey Bay Seafood Watch Guide is an online tool that shows consumers the species and regions that are fished responsibly, covering wild fisheries and aquaculture operations, with an emphasis on environmental sustainability, not humane treatment. 15% of the world's wild-caught fish are certified by the Marine Stewardship Council. But Jackie Marks, Senior Communications Manager for the MSC, notes it does not address animal welfare.
The MSC is a nonprofit organization focused on sustainable fishing with healthy populations, healthy ecosystems, and maintaining legal and management requirements. And we're not experts in seafood quality or animal sentience, so that really sits outside of our mission.
The Aquaculture Stewardship Council published its fish health and welfare criterion 2 years ago. ASC spokesperson Maria Casanera says the guidelines lay out best practices for fish farmers.
The group called for certain welfare considerations, including anesthesia of fish during handling operations that can inflict pain or injury if fish are moving, and maximum time fish can be out of water.
Some national animal welfare groups are promoting the idea of humane slaughter for fish, which aims to reduce or eliminate the fish's pain and suffering. Currently, many fish are chilled to death in an ice slurry or asphyxiated by being taken out of the water before being stunned or killed. This story was produced with original reporting by Jessica Scott Reed for Sentient. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thank you for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Larry Lashley. And thanks to our reporters, Daniel Mintz, Elise Cox, and Suzanne Potter. KMUD News is online. You can find us on KMUD.org, SoundCloud, Instagram, and Facebook. That's where you can see stories, links, related documents, and videos. If you have questions or suggestions, you can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send us an email to news@kmud.org. Reporting from our studio in Redway, I'm Lauren Schmidt.